Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Almost a year after affirmative action in college admissions was struck down nationwide by the United States Supreme Court, Massachusetts lawmakers want to do something similar with legacy admissions. This is where schools favor applicants related to school alumni. It's a practice that has come under scrutiny in light of the Supreme Court's affirmative action ruling because it disproportionately benefits white and wealthier students. WBUR education reporter Max Larkin covered a bill that would ban the practice, and he is here to talk to us about it. Max, we have another thorny higher education story. So once again, thank you so much for being here to walk us through it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So first, tell me more about this proposed ban. Where is it coming from? What are the reasons for it? Talk to us about it.
Yeah, it's a bill. It got referred out of the Joint Committee on Higher Education a few weeks ago on Beacon Hill. And the sponsor is Senator Lydia Edwards, who has been a voice for equity for a long time. And it's kind of on the pattern of efforts that multiple states are taking, because as you said, affirmative action goes down, threatening diversity at really selective schools. And everybody looks at legacy, which is still in place, and that seems to be pulling in the opposite direction. So I think a lot of people expected that a bunch of schools would announce with some fanfare that they were doing away with legacy preferences in their admissions process. But so far, that hasn't really happened. You have a few isolated incidents, but we didn't see a tidal wave of schools walking away from this practice.
We didn't see a tidal wave of schools walking away from the practice. What do you mean by that?
So I think it was in 2021 that Amherst College, which is a small liberal arts school, very affluent, very prestigious, very selective, out in Western Mass, said, we are doing away with legacy preferences. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we're doing that is it amounts to a reward on top of the genetic or cultural reward of having a parent that went to Amherst College. And then after the affirmative action decision, you had a school like Wesleyan in Connecticut using the same argument. But advocates for this bill say that there are dozens of schools in Massachusetts, you know, pretty intense cluster of colleges and universities that still do this.
What's the benefit of legacy admissions?
You have to think about it on a couple different levels, right? Mm-hmm. So if your dad or mom went to a school, you may have a familiarity with that school. You may, you know, have grown up going there, hearing stories about it, and fit a little more seamlessly in. And maybe that's innocuous. But on another level, you know, you are, as I said, likelier to come from at least a middle-income background, and in many cases, an upper-income background. And what that means is that you are likelier to be able to pay, to cost the school less in scholarships. And moreover, you probably are better prepared in the sense that you are disproportionately likely, let's say, to have had a really top-tier high school education. And then I think that the unseemly possibility, though this is kind of contested in the literature, is that people might be more likely to donate or give of their time as alumni if they think, hey, there's something in this for me at the end of this process.
What kind of reactions have you heard when discussing a ban on legacy admissions?
Yeah, I think what people don't realize, right, is that we've long known that legacy preferences have existed in various forms for decades and decades, right? But we are talking about a bill that would apply both to public institutions that have some degree of transparency when they face, you know, public scrutiny, and private institutions. And their admissions processes have historically been totally opaque, black boxes. Mm-hmm. And so we know that this is being used, but we don't know how big an advantage it's giving, how it's being implemented. It could change very much institution to institution. I asked the Association of Independent Colleges and Universities in Massachusetts for a comment on this idea. They represent entirely, you know, private institutions, and as you might imagine, they are skeptical. In a statement, a spokesperson said, "Each college and university is unique, a reflection of its mission to serve its students, and ultimately, admissions practices and decisions should be made by individual institutions." And they added that since everyone is reacting to the affirmative action ban and what that means for diversity and equity in admissions, this is not the time, they said, for what they called government mandates. So they are skeptical and they are influential in this state, as this bill hopes to make it over the finish line by this summer.
Max, I want to take a quick break here, but when we get back, I want to talk about what this proposed ban on legacy admissions could mean for diversity. We'll be right back.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with more from WBUR education reporter Max Larkin. So, Max, we're talking about legacy admissions and the proposed ban from Massachusetts state lawmakers. I want to shift over to the student body, and I want to talk about what a ban on legacy admissions could mean for diversity there.
So one of the things that I did while I was reporting this story was to think, you know, this is fundamentally a multi-generational story. So it doesn't just matter that these schools have become more diverse. On balance, they have. In recent years, particularly places like Harvard, thanks in part to race-conscious admissions or affirmative action. But where were they 20 years ago, 40 years ago? And so I picked four schools that use legacy preferences. So that's Tufts, Harvard, Williams College, Boston College. And in 1980, which is the earliest year you can get the data from, their students were 88% white on average. And so what that means is, to the extent that their graduates go out and have children, you're creating a legacy pool that is at least that white. And so, you know, I spoke to a Stanford-Harvard research team who conducted a recent study of what they call the Ivy 11, 11 highly selective schools. And what they found was, first of all, that legacy does have a big impact on an applicant's likelihood of actually attending one of these highly selective schools, but also that if you take all the high-scoring, relatively well-qualified applicants, of the white students, 12% of them have legacy status at one of those schools. Of the South Asian applicants, it's under 2%. So even as these schools grow more diverse, there's sort of a time lag. And what you see in particular in this study is that, like, Indian American, Bangladeshi American, Pakistani American students are much less likely to have that advantage and therefore are at a discrete and, they would say, considerable disadvantage as they apply to the schools.
Talk to me about the opposition to this ban and what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I think there, you know, because of the policy's unpopularity and how self-serving it would be for people to come out and be like, I think this policy should stay because I went to one of these institutions and I want my kid to get in. I think it's a squeamish kind of issue. On some level, you have to respect the fact that they didn't just say, let's ban this at public institutions, because that's easier to do. But they swung for the fences. So I spoke to Mary Tamer. She's executive director of Democrats for Education Reform. Their lobbying arm is a big supporter of this bill. And she noted that technically, the state's Department of Higher Education, Daryl, already grants what they call degree-granting authority. Mm-hmm. And so it already has the power to revoke that authority to give out degrees if they fall out of compliance with state standards.
It's actually the state legislature that allows both public and private institutions to give graduating students degrees is coming from the state already. And so there was an opportunity to tackle this on both sides.
And Daryl, it would have a much larger influence at the private institutions that are hyper-selectives. But I think it sets up a really interesting enforcement question where it's kind of a nuclear option. If those schools decide that they love this practice so much that they're willing to go to war with the state over it and the bill passes into law, you know, is the legislature really ready to basically take away their ability to operate as a university? I think that's a big question raised by this bill.
Yeah. Tell me more about how this bill could be enforced.
So other states and other bills have contemplated crossing another red line, or what was a red line until around 2017, which is, you know, these schools are private, they're also nonprofit. There's an idea that they serve the public interest. But as they've served the public interest, schools like Harvard, schools like Amherst have become very, very wealthy indeed. So donors have helped make that happen. They might be a little upset if this kind of historical privilege were taken away. I spoke to one man who I thought had a kind of interesting perspective on it, Raul Fernandez. He's an education scholar and activist based in Brookline, wears a lot of hats. And he said maybe these highly selective schools should actually welcome a state ban, given that they've got anxious and maybe angry donors watching. Let's hear from him.
If a state law is passed, those institutional leaders may be able to say, hey, not our doing, right? We need to comply with state law, take it up with the legislature, you know, maybe avoid some of that backlash.
In other words, it's in somebody else's hands. And this is an unpopular practice, as we said. And I think, yeah, there's a sense in which it's nice to be able to blame the state legislature.
Max, with all that said, what is the likelihood that this bill to end legacy admissions in Massachusetts will pass?
I think if it were a ballot question, say, it might pass by a resounding margin based on the polling that I've seen. Mm-hmm. But because it is a bill in our notoriously slow, opaque, and much lobbied state legislature, I think it may be difficult. It's not as if every university is going to be piping up and objecting to this, because they don't all work in the same way. But I do think they, you know, that statement I read from their professional organization in the state kind of tells me that they're prepared to speak out against this. And I think they have allies in people who say, well, admissions processes at private institutions are at private institutions. And if we get into the habit of managing every aspect of what they consider and what they don't, that could look very different in a state like Florida or Texas than it does in Massachusetts. Mm. And so it does feel like a scary precedent. And then I think there's one other detail that I think we would want to get to, which is just because you ban this practice, it does not mean that those seats will suddenly go to deserving but underrepresented students. There have been some speculation, like we talked about those super wealthy, super large endowments, and that pushes schools into a place where they can be pretty generous with financial aid. As we've talked about, I went to Harvard on pretty large scholarship myself. But the schools that can actually do that are few and far between. So I spoke to Angel Perez, who runs the National Association for College and Admissions Counselors, big trade organization for people in the field. And he used to work at a highly selective school. And he said every year he would go before the college's board of trustees and show the faces and names and resumes of hyper-talented, wonderful, low-income students. And here's what happened next.
And the trustees would just look at me and say, how could you not admit these students? They're incredible. And I would say, because we can't afford to do that. Because we need a certain number of students who can pay the tuition so that we can meet our operating budget.
Money, money, money.
So Perez, speaking for this enormous organization of 27,000 members, say admissions officers are all over the map. Some like legacy admissions, some don't. But basically, it's a sideshow, he argued, that it only accounts for, you know, say 10-15% of the class at a maximum. And if a school needs money and they're using legacy admissions to get people paying full freight, you could ban the practice, and they could just find kids from other backgrounds who can pay full freight. So his fear, I guess, is that you would expend a lot of political energy notionally to make this thing more fair, but not really move the needle.
Max, as always, I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you want to get in touch with us, hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.